out Smith and Edwards does left, and I think that's the one to have, I think.
The Huxworks one, I guess, is pretty good too, so.
And by the way, I didn't know that Huxworks had a 22LR flow can. Of course, I knew they had a 5.56 flow can, but they've got a 22LR flow can now. I didn't even know they had one. And it's in stock right now at Smith & Edwards. It's on the shelf. I think it was $100 more. Yeah, it was $3.99 instead of $2.99. It was only $2.99 for the Sparrow.
They came out with that one, I think, last year, I want to say. Yeah, last year. Well, it hasn't been that long, but what I've seen online about it, they like it.
I think, he was, you know, see, Mike was asking me, is it worth the extra $100 to have that Huxworks? And I said, well, I don't really think it's worth the extra $100. It emits a little bit more noise out the front than what a non-flow can does. But then again, it is a semi-auto that he's running it on, so a flow can might have been better. But,
but for 22LR, it really doesn't matter. I mean, really the only thing he's going to hear is, you know, you're going to hear is the action move back and forth anyway, no matter what can you get.
Now, that is true. You got a point there.
Shooting the RPRs with it, the Sparrow on there. The only thing I hear is the spring. And if I'm shooting with, you know, hearing protection in, I don't even know if it's shot or not.
That is true. I do have a thing for our RPRs. I definitely have a thing for those, especially yours. You got some cool ones. And, I don't know, man. I got a thing for those. They're quieter than what his 1022 is going to be because of the action, but I think he really wanted semi-auto, so that works. Property up there at Bear Lake. He just bought another piece of property up there too with that money I loaned him. But his main property that he camps on, he's got a ton of prairie dogs on it, right on the property, 10 acres, whatever it is. He was shooting him with a 6 hour P322 with a can. And he was shooting and thinking he was missing. So he walked out there into the field on his property. Whole bunch of dead dogs laying around. He goes, oh, I guess I was hitting him.
I'm talking with one of the ROs up at the range. There's a lot up there around Bear Lake.
Yeah, I didn't never know that until he told me a week or two ago. And he told me, he said, I don't mind shooting him with that P322 and a can on it. That one from, you know, the Made in Utah type thing, you know, that I used to have, but, which isn't very quiet. But anyway, he says, I don't mind shooting him with that P322. Rifle guy, I don't like shooting with handguns. So I said, I need the same thing, only in a rifle with a scope, and I'll feel better about it. And I said, okay, I'll hook you up. So, I mean, it's kind of... At least got it purchased today.
Introduce him to a 204, huh?
Yeah, only that would be loud. No sense even trying to get that subsonic, it's never gonna make it.
Have too much subsonic 24 long rifle.
Gosh, especially when you own property so many different places and you camp on it. You know, that's where all the fun's at, sitting around by some campfire and blinking. I'm schooling him, he's figuring it out slowly.
Out back, hanging up some targets. Yeah, it looks like the Sequoia has completely debarked itself.
So I saw that and it was kind of freaking me out. I didn't know why, because a lot of it's in my driveway. And I'm looking at it going, why did it do that? And I think it was on that one big windstorm we had a few days back. And so, yeah. In fact, Jamie and I were looking for the little fuzzballs on it. And you have to look real hard to even find the fuzzballs on that tree.
Popping up until like fall time, but yeah, my entire backyard is covered with dark areas, but see any of these branches have bark on them.
I don't remember it ever doing that before, you know what I mean? Just debarking itself like that. I just don't remember that ever happening. Yeah, well, pulling in the driveway. 936.
Alright, 527. 9, calling for Brandon, WRWG 395.
WRWG 395, what's going on?
Not a whole lot, I just seen your tag. Surprised you're just now monitoring. I typically monitor throughout the entire day, but I don't know. I'm getting kind of a small amount of reception issues on the UV5R, the little one. But most of that's from the NOAA Weather Channel, so I'm not super concerned about it. It's just weird.
The only reason I'm on right now, well, normally I would be on. I need to take my radio to work. I just need to start doing that. But I'm in the car right now. Running an errand real quick. Jeff just ordered a new phone, so I'm going to go pick it up at Best Buy because I told her just to do it that way because then I don't have to make three trips to take her there to get it and take her, bring it back. I just said I'll go get it and then I'll have it and set it up for tomorrow. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
So, yeah, it's like I need to utilize the radios I have in my vehicles because it's to the point where it's like if I'm not using them, why even have them?
I get your point because, I mean, I've gone through that for 2 years now, and I've had my license for 2 years. So, like, unless we're all just kind of hanging out and out and about, don't really use it as much as I'd like, but it's kind of whatever. I mean, it's good to have them when you need them, but most of the time they just kind of sit there, and I'd like to kind of avoid that, but especially now that I've got a nice antenna, and I eventually plan to upgrade my radio.
I love the radio stuff. Like, I want to get more... gets in the way and then I forget about it, and that's not what I want to do with the radio hobby. Like Taylor, I know he says he likes it, but then he doesn't do it, which I don't know his deal with that, but no, I just don't want my stuff to sit in dormant.
See, and I more often than I do not, I see you and Taylor just kind of not doing anything with it. And, I mean, it sucks to say, but, like, even though I don't have anybody really to conversate with over the radio, I mean, I have my radio every single day, regardless, just in case. And I monitor, and because everybody's working, nobody's on, but I still have it. And every time I go into from home in my truck, I have my mobile on.
Because I want to, like I said, get into that too, and we're me, the difference between us two, yeah, mine, I've been sitting on it for a while, where I haven't had a lot of free time. I'll give it that. He has more free time than all of us. I don't know why he's not into it, but now I understand the whole guilty of it.
On the radio every day, I mean, every half hour or so, I actually go on to the repeater, multiple repeaters, and monitor and mention that I'm monitoring, and then I'll, you know, let it cycle through and scan the list, and I don't really see traffic, especially during the day when everybody's at work, which I get, but it's just kind of, I don't know, I mean, I've got... antenna, so I typically just end up grabbing the UV5R at the water. 5R W's aren't going to give you the versatility you get with these Nagoyas, but you do have a more stealthy aspect. And honestly, I still do want to get a stubby, a lot like the one Taylor runs on his Ocean, but I can't say upgraded, but I swapped up battery on the UV5R, and I got that antenna. Not even know how to time out feature. Lovely. But as I was saying, is funds-wise, I'm kind of budgeted out for radio stuff. I'm pretty maxed out with what I can do because I just bought that antenna and the spring, and I bought a battery for the UV5R. So I'm kind of maxed out with what I can play with.
That and for a year, so if I have any issue with it at any time, the work is certified and warrantied, so I got to turn here. So there's that, which I know me and you could have done it. I mean, he said, he's like, I'm sorry, I still have your truck. He's like, heck, we had everything put in, ready to go in like 2 hours, and it was perfect. But here we are almost a week later.
Waiting on the part. But anyway, yeah, the hard part's waiting on parts, and, I mean, the condenser I can definitely understand, but it's kind of hard to say. I mean, it shouldn't take a week. It really shouldn't, because you can get that condenser pretty much anywhere and have it in a day, and same with the compressors. But with them going through warranty and everything, that takes, you know, a day or two job and turns it into a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Sent in a warranty claim to Four Seasons for the time that it pays to do it, which he's being really fair with me because he gave me a base amount of labor. I mean, it was, I mean, yeah, he's an LLC, but he's doing this all under the table because he's a private shop. I mean, he's helping me out, but he submitted a warranty claim so he can still get compensated additionally for, you know, the labor of him having to do it all over again and, you know, so on and so forth. So that's also nice on him with that warranty, because let's say that the one I provided out of the box was bad. Yeah, I can go get the warranty replaced, but I could have done all that. But I'm still paying his labor again to take it off and put it back on. Not that he would charge me probably to do it, because I know him personally, but it's still it's a win-win factor for him. Like, I would still want to compensate him for having to go out of his time to do it again when it wasn't his fault, if that makes sense, if I was dealing with the warranty.
I definitely get that, but I mean, I still don't get the whole deal with you buying the wrong compressor, because it's not the wrong compressor, but it's whatever. But, yeah, with them having to go through warranty, it takes so much more time, but at least he can warranty the parts and warranty the work. That's the biggest thing, and for me, I just wish I had a machine, because I can do all the work I need to. I don't care about spending the money, but I don't pay for labor. I do all my own work for a reason.
Everything that he did, as far as, like, you know, the condenser and all that, I'm sure I could do. Like, it doesn't look hard. O-rings and fittings. I deal with that every day at work, fixing paint spray equipment. That's literally O-rings and fittings all I deal with when I do maintenance work. So I could do all that myself. It's just he has, and obviously, I mean, you having experience doing air conditioning parts, you being there to do it with me would obviously be better, of course, in that scenario, but yeah, no, I get it.
Because, you know, you don't have a space to work on your own vehicle, so you're paying for labor, which is ultimately what's killing you the most. But then you also have to pay for the amount of Freon and everything, which most companies are going to charge you $100 to $150 or more, versus, like, going to Gabe, he only charged you for the Freon that you actually use, which in my case was, like, $18. So, I mean, I did my estimate for the price of the compressor, price of the dryer, and price of the Freon, and it came out like $300. So, if I had a machine, I could save so much money on everybody's vehicles, you know, that I personally know, that I can work on or work with. But, I mean, one of these days, but it's hard, especially where you can't do your own stuff, because of your location.
Benson's the other day, just because I've used them. They're the ones who did the valve seals on the Suburban. And they did some stuff on my car that I can do. And I was just curious, like, how much do you guys charge to do a retro, well, an R134A conversion kit on a 1992 Chevy 1500? They quoted me, it, on their price, $14.50, which I know that's with markup and that's with their labor rates and all of that. And I'm in it with this guy, just barely $600.
Genuinely outrageous, because the conversion, ultimately, there is not a lot involved. Unless you're literally swapping every single part for R134A components, which you've more or less already done. So it's literally just installation of the condenser, compressor, accumulator, dryer, and the freon. So it is really not much different than anything else.
936.
Voice again. Anyway, Dustin, yeah, as I was saying, that's what they wanted to charge for that job, and I don't know. That's like, I guess it all depends on where you go. And knowing someone, it's always nice. You know, I pay fairly what they charge, and luckily this guy being a privately owned place, which this isn't his primary job. He works for the base. He does this just as a side thing, and me paying him his labor directly, that covers, I mean, he's not, because, you know, paying like a name like Jensen's, a lot of that money goes to keep the business open, the labor, you know, a lot of expense factors that you pay to go to a big name shop like that.
I could definitely do stuff like that, but my biggest thing is I don't have the machine, and I don't have a way of, you know, guaranteeing the parts and labor, especially where I'm even less than doing it on the side. I'm doing it more than on the table. It's more on the lines of a favor or a hobby more than a side business or an LLC. So for me, it's difficult. So going through somebody like that definitely is a great option, especially with avoiding or something, because they're going to totally eat up everything they can for that money. And like I mentioned, I'm charging outrageous amounts of money for doing the job on any other vehicle, but because it's a different class of work, even though it's not, they're charging more.
And I will say, like, I've seen their work, and they do a good job. They do their work, I'll give them that. They do a good job. And it's just like, if you go through, I mean, when I worked for O'Reilly's on the commercial side, I know how it works. Like, Midas and all those other places, they charge, the corporations, they charge a lot more per labor rates and stuff like that to keep their business afloat. And, you know, of course, that cost goes down to the customer. And yeah, there's just a lot of factors, but it just depends. And where this guy, he doesn't even promote his side business. I mean, this is something, it's kind of like a word of mouth and know a guy type deal. I mean, he has clients that know him, and he has friends that know him, and then that's how he, you know, keeps this going.
I mean, knowing guys or knowing people is definitely good, especially when it comes to entrusting your vehicle to them. The only other place that I could think of that might be better than Jensen's, or, you know, somebody who actually does this more specific conversions or whatever you want to call it, would be Western Radiator up on Pennsylvania Avenue. I've only delivered to them a couple times, but I know they deal with a lot of classics. They deal with a lot of vintage systems, as well as modern vintage systems, like, you know, your vintage air, cold air products and stuff, as well as the OEM stuff. So it's kind of hit or miss. Those are probably the only other guys that I know of that I would personally probably look into, but I wouldn't even consider Jensen's, to be honest.
Minutes. of like an inconvenience factor. It's like, okay, well, I don't really feel like doing it. But where you told me about Valvoline, where I can sit in the car, and I've taken my car there, and I took my truck there, I think it's once or twice, and I'm pretty satisfied with their work, and it's fair price, and yeah, it's not too bad. And I can't believe I'd say that about a quick lube place, considering what I've seen in the lube business.
I can honestly say I wouldn't trust most Valvoline oil change shops, or especially lube or Take 5. I wouldn't even consider Take 5. But the only reason I suggested Roy is because I personally know those guys. I personally work with them. And they know if they screw up, they're going to hear it from Mike. They're going to hear it from Justin, 12 people. And they're going to hear it from every person with a mouth. And they're going to keep that. On top of, you know, their reputation, they are one of the best in the area for a reason. And I was, you know, a part of that at one point, so I knew what really went into it. And, you know, compared to all the other oil change shops around here, Valvoline, when I was still working there and, you know, shortly thereafter, it was a whole different story. I mean, if you go back now, and it's really not a bad place, it's good, reliable service. They're not as quick as they used to be, but, you know, they're in and out with new people. I mean, just in my time alone, my 4 years that I was with there, we went through 30 employees. The turnover rate was insane. But those who did stick around made it so much more reliable, faster, and just overall a better option.
Right, exactly. Also to do the FCC thing, WRWG395. Yeah, that's true. And with the dealership, because I can't even go back to my old work, because I used to know everybody, which I kind of know some of them, and have work done there, and I know how it works. But it's like I took my mother's car there once, and I just, yeah, I was not pleased at all. They spilled oil all over the engine bay. They didn't clean up underneath. They tried to recommend all these services that I know that car does not need. And I'm thinking, okay, this is a 17-year-old car, and you're going to do this to me. It's like you're going to try to sell me a $2,000 reseal job. It's like, I guess they're doing their job, but that's what they're supposed to do, and that's the big reason I left there, because that's, you know, the whole goal is to bring work into the shop from the oil change rack at the dealership. Anyway, I know some of the inside information.
XY549. Yeah, no, I definitely get that. And dealerships are hard because they do shoot for profit. I can tell you, Valvoline really doesn't profit a whole lot. Arby's. Back when I worked at Arby's, they didn't profit very much at all. So, smaller locations and smaller options are probably going to be, you know, more down to what you need. But things like dealerships, I mean, they're going to tell you all kinds of things. I mean, I've heard stories on stories on stories of dealerships telling people they need tires or a cabin air filter and this and that, even though it's all brand new or very, very, very low miles. But because it's been sitting for 6 months, it needs all this stuff. It's all for money. It really is, and it sucks.
My car, for example, I mean, it's pushing 200,000 miles. I mean, there's, I mean, when you're done resealing the entire engine, I could buy a new engine for that price, for all the labor and the work to reseal this entire engine, and it's not worth it, in my opinion. I don't have any active leaks that are dripping on the ground, so, but they're going to try to find all that.
A bunch of work done to the engine with resealing it and your heads and everything. Because I'm pretty sure you did. So you really shouldn't have very many issues.
I had the all new brand new injectors and lifters, because me and the master mechanic did a lifter job on this car because, you know, active fuel management, which this car luckily is a little bit different than the LS series active fuel management system where it doesn't eat lifters, but I got an excellent deal on it, so I had it done. It was about 150-ish thousand miles that I had that done. Yeah, that was the most extensive work this engine's had. The valve cover seals, I mean, they're brand new of 5 years ago, but they're already starting to seep. They're not leaking, but they're seeping. And the oil pan was dry for many years. Well, that's starting to seep. And there's just seeps everywhere. No leaks, just seeps.
Something like that starts seeping instead of anything else. I mean, my transmission on the PH650, as an example, I had replaced that gasket one time, and that was 7 years ago. And every day, it was wet. It was seeping transmission fluid, but it was never leaking. And even after 6 or 7 years, it had not lost any transmission fluid, but it was damp. Every single time I check it, it was damp.
Know what it is if it's the quality of gaskets and like this era of General Motors engines. But even on all of these cars, I've seen 30,000 miles, 3800 series engines that have seep galore. And they're gently driven grandma cars. And even high mileage 300,000 ones. They're not leaking, but they're seeping. It's just, I don't know if it was just the quality of the materials they used on this era of General Motors, I don't know.
Something else to consider is not so much the gaskets, but the pans themselves. And I've seen this working in Valvoline time and time again. The pan is possible for the pan itself to seep. Whether it be from the rust or whatever, but it is just porous enough that if it's what we call seasoned, is that it is possible for it to start seeping out of the metal. Not so much the gasket, but the metal. And that, I'm pretty sure, like 99% sure, is what was going on with the PH350. Because it was never damp around the gasket, but it was always wet on the bottom of the pan, every single time. And yeah, I could not figure it out, but I'm like 90% sure it was seeping through the metal. And I've seen it a couple times, so it's not impossible.
Another car, for example, the Monte Carlo, that is an 07, which it only has now like 86,000 miles. And when we moved here back in 2012, the car was still under, well, it was about 2013 or 14 when this happened. The car was still under manufacturer warranty, powertrain warranty, and I want to say it was about 43,000 miles, just barely over that. 12-10 was leaking, and it was quite a good leak, too, from what I remember, and we had the warranty work done on it, and that was all said and done great. Well, 86,000-some-odd miles now. Pan's not leaking, but it's not leaking, but it's wet. Like, you know what I mean? It's just weird. Anyway, bro, I'm just here at Best Buy. I gotta go in and get her phone, so I will talk to you soon. I'm assuming you're close to home.
Just got off work, so we'll see how that goes, traffic-wise, but yeah. Well, don't have too much fun, so WRX, Wi-Fi 4.9, clear.
All right, well, I'll talk to you soon. WRWG 395, I'll be clear.
WRs.